Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, November 4, 2004. At KPFA in Berkeley, I'm Deepa Fernandez. Palestinians hold their breath as conflicting reports come in on the death of Yasser Arafat. President Bush gives a rare press conference and lays out his goals for the next 4 years. We also get react from Cuba, Iraq, and the streets of Chicago. And there's growing fear in Haiti that the severe repression is like that of previous military dictatorships, but this time sanctioned by the US and international community. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. The so-called coalition of the willing in Iraq is slowly dwindling as more nations say they will pull out of what has been small contingents from around the globe. Geraldine Coughlin has more from The Hague.
1,300 Dutch troops are currently serving under British command in southern Iraq. The Dutch government said it would send a fifth and final contingent to Iraq from mid-November to March next year to help oversee the elections. But the foreign minister didn't rule out what he termed unforeseen circumstances that could open fresh discussions with Parliament on extending the March withdrawal date. Hungary has also announced it would withdraw its 300 troops from Iraq in March after the elections in January. And in a similar move, Bulgaria said it would cut its military presence in Iraq by 10%, leaving 430 troops. The UK, Italy and Poland are the only EU countries that have not planned to withdraw. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Geraldine Coughlin in The Hague.
European election observers released their findings on the U.S. elections. Dolores Bernal reports from D.C.
The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, deployed 92 observers from 34 countries, including 56 parliamentarians, to monitor the polls. The Bush administration invited the OSCE to participate in the elections as part of the implementation of the Help America Vote Act of 2002, or HAVA. A calling center was set up for voters to call with comments and complaints about voting problems, including new electronic voting machines, which was a central issue. Barbara Herring led the mission.
Introducing electronic equipment in election procedures is a new challenge for not only for all states, but for all countries who deal with this. And the most obvious solution would be the prompt introduction of paper trail.
Among other findings, the observers found that in many polling sites, election workers were poorly trained in assisting voters with e-voting machines as well as handle the large voter turnout. Reporting from Washington, D.C., I'm Dolores Bernal for Free Speech Radio News.
Farmers in India are using Coke and Pepsi Colas as pesticides, finding the products work better and are less expensive than commercial pesticides. In New Delhi, Vinod K. Jose reports.
Farmers in central India use it in large scale on their cotton and sugar crops, saying it works well on the pests, whereas the pesticides fail. There is one more reason for farmers using colas in their fields. They find Coke much cheaper, at least 10 times, than the pesticides. But this practice has turned out to be a major embarrassment for the cola companies here. They claim the illiterate farmers are using it on misinformation and denied any pesticide effect of colas. A company official said if there were any truth, they would be selling pesticides rather than soft drinks. But agricultural scientists give the farmers some backing. They say the high sugar content of the drinks can make them effective in combating pests. Earlier this year, a Delhi-based NGO revealed a study showing pesticide contents in the soft drinks sold here. A government investigation is still pending. Meanwhile, the practice is gaining so much popularity in central and south India that sales of the soft drinks have increased drastically in remote villages. From New Delhi in India, I'm Vinod K. Jose for Free Speech Radio News.
The Bush administration is trying to suppress an eight-nation report that endorses mandatory cuts in greenhouse gases. Erica McDonald has the story.
Reflecting the work of more than 300 scientists, the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment finds historic increases in temperature in the Arctic, glacial melting, and abrupt weather changes largely linked to human-generated greenhouse gas emissions. Temperatures in the Arctic increased tenfold compared to a 1 degree Fahrenheit average across the rest of the world. Accelerated warming in the Arctic is what prompted scientists to recommend immediate and mandatory cuts to carbon dioxide emissions. The Bush administration is pushing to cut that section of the report. Other members of the Council, which includes Russia, Canada, and several Nordic nations, have complained about U.S. resistance. A top negotiator said the Bush administration was willing to sidetrack the entire process rather than face the global warming issue. From KPFT in Houston, I'm Erica McDonald for Free Speech Radio News.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
As we go to air today, a French hospital spokesperson has denied reports from earlier today that Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has died. Our Ramallah correspondent Awad Dwabes has more.
Once again, the news about the health of Yasser Arafat are contradictory. An official statement made by the Hospital of Percy in France denied the death of the Palestinian leader, and the Palestinian Prime Minister confirmed that Arafat is still in a serious but stable condition.
We are following carefully the president situation. I think more or less he's stable, but he under a very serious care from our friends, the French doctors, and he still need more care from the hospital.
Earlier, Palestinian Authority restarted its urgent meetings after this news. The Executive Committee of the PLO and the Central Committee of Fatah faction met in the Palestinian headquarters in Ramallah with the participation of the former Prime Minister, the Secretary General of the Executive Committee of the PLO, Mahmoud Abbas Abu Mazen, and the Prime Minister, Ahmed Quri' Abu Ala. But the Prime Minister is due to leave the West Bank to the Gaza Strip, a move that was seen by observers as another step in the preparation of the after Arafat period. Though former Minister of Information, member of the Executive Committee of the PLO, Yasser Abed Rabbo, said the visit of the Prime Minister to Gaza was on schedule and has nothing to do with the health situation of Arafat.
The move of the Prime Minister to Gaza is in the framework of a schedule that was made before anything happened. And this had and has nothing to do with the health status of President Arafat.
In the street, Palestinians are continuing their life and following with a lot of worries the news coming from Paris. Majdi Ahmed, who teaches in a school in Ramallah, was surfing the net and listening to the radio, looking for more news about the health of Yasser Arafat. He told us that he is worried mostly about what might happen if Arafat dies.
I am trying to follow the news by internet or news agencies and the radio at the same time. I'm very worried about what might happen afterwards. The situation will certainly change after Arafat. In this particular time, we want to see him in control and not anyone else. The most scary thing is to see internal Palestinian fighting after he dies.
But for other Palestinians, talking about the health of Arafat was not acceptable. For Youssef Rayan, who is a policeman in Ramallah, President Arafat is doing fine and he will come back home. He said he doesn't believe anything concerning the deterioration of Arafat's health.
The health of the President Arafat is improving, and he will return back. But even if he doesn't, nothing will happen. There will be a committee who will take charge of the responsibility, and no fights are allowed.
The situation on the ground is becoming more stressful for Palestinians who are lost between the fear of losing their historic leader, his health, and their situation after he dies, with several questions in mind. Is Yasser Arafat going to survive? Where shall he be buried? And what is the situation going to be after his death? For Free Speech Radio News, I am Awad Davis reporting from Ramallah.
Today, President Bush laid out some of his goals for the next 4 years at a rare press conference in Washington, D.C. Mitch Jeserich has more.
Now that I've got the will of the people at my back, I'm going to start enforcing the one question rule. You're violating the follow-up rule.
After meeting with his cabinet, George Bush spoke to the Washington, D.C. press corps before heading off to Camp David for vacation. Spite News reports that Attorney General John Ashcroft will resign, possibly within the next couple of weeks. Bush made no comments on any particular member of his cabinet, but he did say changes are inevitable. Bush also called on Congress, when it returns for a lame duck session in mid-November, to pass a controversial 9/11 reform bill that is stalled in a Senate House Conference Committee. Being the first president to win a majority of the electoral vote since his father in 1988, Bush also called on the new 109th Congress to pass more of his top policy priorities.
The people have spoken and embraced your point of view, and that's what I intend to tell the Congress, that I made it clear what I intend to do as the president. Now let's work together, and the people made it clear what they wanted. Now let's work together. And it's one of the wonderful, it's like earning capital. You asked, do I feel free? Let me put it to you this way. I earned capital in the campaign, political capital, and now I intend to spend it. It is my style. That's what happened in after the 2000 election. I earned some capital. I've earned capital in this election, and I'm going to spend it for what I told the people I'd spend it on, which is, you've heard the agenda, Social Security and tax reform, moving this economy forward, education, fighting and winning the war on terror.
The president did say that he will work to create what he calls an ownership society, and reforming Social Security, he says, will be on the top of that agenda. One proposal previously supported by the GOP and the president is the creation of individual private accounts where people would redirect their Social Security taxes into financial markets. Susan Moraney, the National Executive Director of the Great Panthers, says it's a myth that Social Security is bankrupt. She says if left alone, Social Security would be funded for the next 40 years.
The privatization of Social Security helps tremendously Wall Street, and that's who will benefit from the privatization of Social Security. And this administration has been whittling away at social programs, Social Security, Medicare, with the last, the Medicare Modernization Act, and the pharmaceutical drug piece of that, Part D. So it's not, it's certainly within their agenda. We're certainly not surprised. It benefits who Bush would consider to be his base.
In today's press conference, George Bush said he will continue his efforts to reform public education based on the model of his No Child Left Behind Act. One subject the president did not discuss is the environment. In fact, though many environmentalists consider Bush the worst environmental president ever, neither Democrats or Republicans made the environment a major issue in this year's elections. Wesley Warren is with the Natural Resources Defense Council.
This election was not a referendum on the environment. It was just not one of the issues that either of the candidates were willing to or able to elevate to the level of national debate.
Do you think it was a failure by environmentalists that it wasn't made a bigger issue?
Let's face it, every issue in America today that Americans are concerned about had trouble getting coverage except the war in Iraq and the fight against terrorism.
How do you think environmentalists now have to move forward?
The proposals on the environment in the last 4 years were widely unpopular with outdoorsmen, for example, who he considered part of his electoral majority. So I think getting the word to him from people who like to do recreation outdoors, or people on the religious right who believe that we have a duty to protect God's creation, that he will listen to groups that were part of his coalition who may have voted for him for one reason while still being very unhappy about his environmental policies.
Mitch Jezerich, Free Speech Radio News.
Spontaneous and planned protests continue around the country today in reaction to the victory of President Bush and the early concession of John Kerry. From Chicago, Aaron Sarva reports.
The day after President Bush's re-election, around 3,000 people gathered in the early evening outside the Dirksen Federal Building in Chicago's Loop. Major peace groups in Chicago had called a rally in the weeks before the election and issued a statement calling for the immediate withdrawal of troops from Iraq. Light rain did not deter those at the rally from coming together to oppose Bush administration policies. Carl Davidson of Chicagoans Against War and Injustice, one of the rally's organizers, was prepared to protest no matter the outcome of the presidential election.
The way we figure it, there's still plenty of war, there's still plenty of injustice no matter who won the election. So that's why we're here. We think it's especially important to let Bush know that we're not letting up in any way whatsoever. We're going to continue the struggle, we're going to heighten it, and we're going to put an end to the war.
Peace activist Kathy Kelly addressed the crowd shortly before the march commenced up Adams Street. Kelly is a founder of Voices in the Wilderness, a group that has opposed the sanctions in Iraq since the end of the first Gulf War.
It's an enormous cruelty that we've inflicted on people in Iraq. They've gone from the frying pan of a terrible tyrant into the fire of chaos, looting, roadside explosives, occupation brutality, parasitical exiles coming in and trying to take over.
Jim Thompson walked arm in arm with his brother, carrying a sign picturing a woman in fatigues that read, "Bring our sister home." His sister, a mother of three, is stationed in Iraq. Thompson disagrees with the notion that protesters are disrespecting the troops.
I'm supporting the troops 100%. I'm supporting my sister and everyone who's over there by doing this. I know they want us doing this.
As the crowd wound through the downtown streets, many bystanders offered supportive gestures. The march concluded in Millennium Park, where people were gathering for a rally in support of striking city college teachers. Many of the anti-war marchers joined the rally. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Emily Udell with Aaron Sarver in Chicago.
One of the countries that followed the U.S. presidential election very closely was Cuba. It has a lot to lose with a re-elected Bush in the Oval Office, and there's growing consternation on the island as to what comes next, as our Havana correspondent Joseph Muti reports.
A deep sense of disbelief and apprehension is apparent among people here in Havana as the reality of the U.S. presidential election results hit home. The extreme hostility shown to the Cuban government by the White House, in which family visits from Cuban Americans living in the USA have been restricted to one in every 3 years, and financial help to relatives on the island severely limited. Relations between both nations are the worst since the missile crisis in 1962, and Cubans are talking very seriously about the possibility of an invasion. Journalist Alain Diaz.
Bush has Cuba in the so-called axis of evil. He unleashed a war against Iraq using lies so he could use any pretext, like the biological weapons that he says we produce here in this country, in our laboratories, that actually are being used for producing medicines that can cure many illnesses, not only in Cuba but around the world. Well, he can use that reason to attack us. Many people say we don't have to be scared, but we are in this so-called axis of evil, as was Iraq, so we can be the next target.
Aside from apprehension over what the re-election of George W. Bush means for Cuba's sovereignty and independence, there is very genuine concern about what this means for the rest of the world, especially Iraq. Roberto Recio spoke to me outside the TV station, where he works as a producer.
I don't think that people have really realized how dangerous is the fact that a president like Bush has been re-elected. I think it's very dangerous for the international security. And Bush is not going to do anything better for the United States people.
Maria Salgada, a secretary, agrees. She sees another 4 years of the Bush administration as a blow to humanity. It's very sad for humanity in general that Bush won the elections, that's for sure. The world is in terrible convulsions and the only thing he does is add more wood to the fire. But I think that people are becoming more aware of the gravity of the situation and will make an effort to minimize the havoc that is coming. Walter Lippmann, who lives in Los Angeles and runs an electronic news service called Cuba News, commented on the concern felt by most Cubans faced with more hardship in the wake of the Bush re-election.
Before the election, there was just a general sense of apprehensiveness. People here understand that Bush is responsible for a series of measures attacking Cuba, which are really more fierce and more intense than anything that this country has faced before. And yet Cuba has faced those attacks and survived them. And my sense is that it's facing these and, well, really they have no choice but to do what they have to do to survive these latest challenges. My next door neighbor this morning said that she was disappointed in the American people.
That disappointment was widely expressed to me today. Cubans are generally unable to understand how the U.S. electorate could possibly have voted George Bush back into the White House, as they referred to the terrible destruction wrought upon Iraq, the body bags coming home, the proven lies, the corporate welfare, and the harboring of anti-Cuba terrorists in Miami. An office worker in central Havana summed up the general feeling of incredulity.
I can't believe why American people made this choice again. It's the worst things can happen for the world in this moment. I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
In Havana, for Free Speech Radio, I'm Joseph Mutti.
Meanwhile, as President Bush declared victory in this week's election, the U.S. Marine Corps stepped up its attacks on Fallujah, using AC-130 gunships and tanks to pound the eastern and northwestern areas of the city. Hospital officials told Arab TV network Al Jazeera a woman was seriously wounded and a teenage girl lost her right leg in the strikes. The attack comes as the Bush administration readies for a second major assault of the city. FSRN's Aaron Glantz has more.
At his first press conference since declaring victory, George W. Bush didn't shy away from rumors that the U.S. military is readying for a second major assault on Fallujah.
In order for Iraq to be a free country, those who are trying to stop the elections and stop a free society from emerging must be defeated. But I think there's a recognition that some of these people must be defeated. And so that's what they're thinking about. That's why you're hearing discussions about a potential action in Fallujah.
The last time the U.S. staged a major assault on Fallujah, close to 1,000 innocent civilians were killed. So many, in fact, that the municipal football stadium was turned into a mass graveyard for the dead. Dr. Salam Ismail helped bury the bodies in Fallujah. He thinks residents of the city will repel a second siege.
You have to read the history well. The Iraqis never, ever accept the American troops there. They cannot be accepted by the Iraqis at all, whatever the situation is. I don't tell you that's what Ad Alawi is saying to Americans, that we are welcoming and we are thanking for you and all these things. But I'm telling you, okay, many people maybe appreciate Saddam Hussein now is away, but nobody accepts the occupation. This is the fact.
This new attack on Fallujah likely would be happening whoever won the election on Tuesday. During his campaign for president, John Kerry repeatedly accused George Bush of backing off Fallujah. Bush abandoned the first invasion of the city in April after almost half of the U.S.-appointed Iraqi Governing Council threatened to resign to protest the large number of civilian casualties.
What I want to do is change the dynamics on the ground. And you have to do that by beginning to not back off of Fallujah and other places and send the wrong message to the terrorists.
They think that there is a one-block United States versus one-block Arab world.
Jamal Tahat is a Jordanian political analyst and pro-democracy advocate.
There is nothing unexpected. People here expecting worse and worse from the Americans in the region. So there is sort of looking about or searching for what to do, not a sort of amazement to this happen as an unexpected behavior.
If the situation in Iraq does improve, it will be without the help of the Nobel Peace Prize-winning aid agency Doctors Without Borders, which today announced it is pulling out of Iraq because of escalating violence in the country and danger to its staff. In a statement, the agency said it had taken the decision because, quote, it has become impossible for us as an international humanitarian organization to guarantee an acceptable level of security for our staff, whether they are expatriates or Iraqis. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Aaron Glantz.
Hip-hop star Wyclef Jean is visiting Haiti on a peace mission where he's met with poor people in Port-au-Prince's slums. His visit comes as a spate of arbitrary arrests and killings has raised concerns that the U.S.-backed government is carrying out a campaign of repression against supporters of former Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Some human rights observers are beginning to make comparisons with the darkest days of the 91-94 military regime and with the 1957-1986 dictatorship of François Papa Doc Duvalier and his son Jean-Claude Baby Doc. The difference, they say, is that the current government has received the blessing of the international community. Reed Lindsay reports from Port-au-Prince.
A pool of dry blood covers the dirt floor dead end of a twisting alleyway in the slum of Fort National.
a chilling sign that a massacre might have taken place here last week. Neighbors say police officers wearing hooded black masks shot and killed 12 people and then dragged their bodies away. Like most of the slums in Port-au-Prince, Fort Nacional is a bastion of support for former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who was forced out of office on February 29th. Elifet Joseph says he was a friend of several of the men who were killed.
The government doesn't care about politics, only about Aristide. That is why they try to kill all young people. They have a plan to finish off all of his supporters.
Elifet Joseph says he was a friend of several of the men who were killed.
I don't think everybody in the country should die just for one person. Are all of us Aristide? The government has a problem with Aristide, but he is not in this country. He is far from here in South Africa. If you live in the masses, you're scum. You deserve to die.
2 days later, in a nearby slum area known for its pro-Aristide militancy, residents say armed men dressed in police uniforms and black hooded masks executed 4 young men. On Friday, their rotting bodies lay face down in the street covered in flies next to a pile of trash. Their wrists had been tied by shoelaces, and at least 2 had charred fingers, an indication they might have been tortured.
Those guys aren't even 22 years old. They're all children.
One neighbor, who asked not to be named, said he witnessed the executions.
If the police accuse them of something and they have time to capture them, they don't have any reason to kill them.
So far, the international community has said little about abuses committed under the government of Prime Minister Gerard Latortu, which according to human rights groups includes summary executions, rapes, searches without warrants, and illegal arrests and detentions. Neither the United States nor the United Nations, which has a peacekeeping force of more than 3,000 troops in Haiti, have censured the abuses. UN and government officials deny that police are murdering opponents. They've defended a series of police sweeps into poor neighborhoods as an attempt to put an end to violence that has left dozens dead during the last month. Juan Gabriel Valdez is head of the United Nations Stabilization Mission in Haiti.
Well, let me say first of all that what we have seen in this country during the last months or two has been a resurgence of brutal violence, organized probably in order to provoke a process of political destabilization. I think that any state has the right to defend itself. We were sent by the United Nations to help and to assist a government. And this task was given to us by the Security Council of the United Nations.
Evidence of such destabilization has been scant. Gunfire and robberies have become common in downtown Port-au-Prince, but it is not always clear whether they are politically motivated. In recent weeks, media attention has focused on the killing and decapitations of 2 policemen. But the government has presented no evidence they were carried out by Aristide supporters. While the government intensifies a campaign to root out Aristide backers in the slums of Port-au-Prince, it has not disarmed former members of Haiti's now-defunct military. Former soldiers led the revolt to oust Aristide, and they now control many parts of the country. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Reed Lindsay from Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles, and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Simba Russo. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. Our DC editor is Mitch Jeserich. Our technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Mylan, and Eric Klein. Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. For more information, you can visit our website at www.fsrn.org. I'm Deepa Fernandez.